You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. to those ancestors we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to those ancestors, because over time they found themselves the object of a forced exodus when they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to those ancestors, because over time they began to remember who and what they were, because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to them, because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation to those ancestors, because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe, 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 oh.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, and greetings to all of you, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host for the evening. So happy to be with you here this evening. Got kind of a rainy day in Wisconsin, but the weather was nice. It was kind of warming up a little bit. I pray that it keeps working towards the 70s and 80s, because I've had enough of this winter. So nevertheless, I'm so happy that you are here and I'm here. We're all in, hopefully in good health, and things are going as they should. As you know, our world is busy. And so tonight, you know, I kind of thought about a little bit. It's just let's us get together with the brothers and sisters and talk a little bit about some of the things that we have encountered over the last month, couple of months. A lot of stuff. so we haven't had a chance to really do that. A lot of times we like to, always like to do a roundup of our world and the life that we are in. And so this might be a good chance to do that. Last week we were so honored to have Wisconsin State Senator of the 4th District, Ms. Lena Taylor. We've got wonderful reviews from her interview from you, our audience. We thank you so much for listening to her. In terms of her energy that she radiates out into our community. And she's the kind of fighter that we need. A lot of people kind of resist that fight that she has, but you gotta have it. And she's sincerely facing that. I can imagine what her day is like. Each morning she has to walk up the steps to that state capitol in Wisconsin and walk into that room with all of those, that hostility that's there. And it's felt, you know, throughout the state of Wisconsin in terms of African American people. We see a lot of that. Some of the national eyes got a chance to witness it in reference to the Kenosha, Wisconsin incident. That was a mentality that exists throughout that city. And as Lena said, it's one of the leaders of hostility. So she brought clarity to that. And then there's other things that, you know, are there too as well. And so, you know, we did touch on some of that. But a lot of us, a lot of these communities that we live in, a lot of the places that we are backed by that kind of attitude and behavior. And I don't care if it's considered to be a progressive. I don't know what's going on in New York City, what that was. But we'll be hearing very soon what that's all about. And I was listening to the mayor, and they were interviewing the brother, and he was really holding back. And so it's obviously something interesting. And they said they did rule out terrorism, so not quite sure what it is. So anyway, we will wait to see how that comes out, and as we begin to, you know, process our life and world and how we move on and how we work with our children and get them prepared, because that's really the big thing. I think about that every day of my life, is how do we prepare these kids to meet some of these challenges that you're going to see and we're going to get. Check this statement out for me. Man's consciousness.
Well, it ain't going to be, it's not going to be,
Someone came online. Let me just mute that mic. Okay. I want to read a statement to you. I want you to check that out for me. Man's consciousness is a creative act, and it is the kind of consciousness one has little or one has will determine the kind of world one creates. Consequently, when we look at the world we live in, African people, we must recognize to a great extent it is a world of our own creation. It is a world generated by the kind of consciousness that we have permitted to be instilled in us as a people. We talk about the white man as having power. Recognize that power ultimately has to do with the relationship between people and that the white man's so-called power is to a large degree based on that relationship he has with the black man. We empower him by the nature of our own behavior and attitudes as a people. He cannot be what he is unless we are what we are. Dr. Amos Wilson. I think if one thinks about that, that puts us in a real precarious position as we look around and talk about solutions and talk about what should we do and how do we proceed with it. Because very clearly, I do agree. We create the world that we live in. And if we are complacent and we are not activists in terms of change, if we don't have our eyes open and don't have our children learning to keep their eyes open, you know, we are going to see some things like we see now. There on Sunday morning, I worked with a group of ladies, young ladies, well, not young ladies, they're older ladies in 40s, 30s, 50s. And they're coming together to talk about relationships. And they asked me, I'm honored, they asked me to join them. I'm on the mail in the discussion. Starts at 12 o'clock in the, we do it about 12 o'clock noon and go to about 2. And it's so interesting what they feel and try to understand about the men in their lives. And we all agreed that we wouldn't bite our tongues and we won't keep back. And they're open. And it's very clearly those challenges and ideas that they bring forth is at the hub of Black family life. Because we must get the Black family together. And getting the Black family together gets the Black community together. And when we got the Black community together, then we can get our children together. It works just like that. You can't get your children together and have them all understanding and pristine, perfect about life, and then send them out into that world that's not that way. So we have to work with our children. So tonight, I wanted to talk a little bit about our dear brother, our ancestor, Brother Amos Wilson, because very clearly he has done that, and he has written a book, as all of you know, we all know, very powerful publication that very clearly hits at the hub of that, A Blueprint for Black Power, that he wrote. Years ago, 1993, and he's done a powerful job of analyzing for us. I'm sorry, 1998 he did. It's called Blueprint for Black Power, a moral, political, and economic imperative for the 21st century. And so tonight we want to talk about Amos a little bit, and we want to sort of combine that with a term that I have I actually kind of developed that myself from something I was reading once, and it's called the Negroocracy, the Negroocracy, the Negroocracy. And a couple of months we had Brother Mike Hope, who is the editor of the Community Journal newspaper here in Milwaukee, to come on and just kind of talk about what he does. He's a very powerful brother. He is the publisher, editor, assistant publisher, editor of the Milwaukee's, Wisconsin's largest black paper, black newspaper that still does exist. He still is printing. It's basically mostly online. But he does a column called Signify. And in his column, he wrote about that a couple of weeks ago. And I was surprised because what I did is I said I was going to talk about the Negroocracy and what that means and where it comes from. And so I kind of was fishing around on the internet to see if I could find anybody else that might have used that word, and I didn't find anybody else, because like I said, I was the one that kind of put that together. And then I picked up the Google led me to his column called Signifying, and in his column he used it, and you know, he gave me the credits of saying that I introduced that to him in a discussion that he and I were having once, and he talked about that, the Negroocracy. And I thought maybe that would be a good way, too, to bring that in with Amos Wilson's book, Blueprint for Black Power, because in that book he talks about, he doesn't call it the Negroocracy, he calls it the neoconservatives and who they are. And they are tools and weapons that are used to keep us from moving forward. They are kind of like our spokespersons, and they speak for us when it comes around power. So when power hears them speaking, they assume, well, that's the way all black folks think. And very clearly, that's not. And so Amos Wilson wrote about that. He wrote about that in his book. And so we got that. And I And then again, what generated that thought to me is that Supreme Court hearing, the sister that has just been conferred, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, and who she is, and how that was done, and how she was attacked so vehemently because she didn't think the way white folks wanted her to think. And there were some things that she had done in her past that obviously they didn't agree with. And I think one of the things, and we can and just go and lay that out on the table right now, I think one of the things that got Dr. Brown, Dr. Jackson caught up in what she was involved in was the fact that she, at her years at Harvard, may have been very close to Dr. Derrick Bell. And Derrick Bell, and I did some time check, she probably would not have taken classes under him, but she may have very well done work in her latter years, and obviously in his latter years, because he was a tenured professor at Harvard Law School, and he was very Afrocentric, nationalist in his approach. He wrote a book called Faces at the Bottom of the Well, which was talking about the permanency of racism. He felt that racism was permanent, and he did it in a fiction format, but it was a powerful book. And he was a vocal advocate of fighting for the rights of blacks. He strongly protested against Harvard not providing more tenure for black women and others. And he argued those points, you know, very clearly. And he was a gifted jurist. He himself would have been a powerful judge somewhere, but they would have never, ever let him get on the Supreme Court or in any court of that caliber, particularly during those years, because those were the years that the Bushes were around, and neither one of them would have agreed to that. And so anyway, he's an ancestor now, but I think that's where she ran into the problem. And, you know, she worked with him on some things, I was told, and they joined in on some things, even though she clerked for a Supreme Court justice. That didn't matter. She was in bad company. And as you know, that critical race theory concept comes from Derrick Bell, Dr. Derrick Bell. So I think that, again, that's where she got caught up. But nevertheless, this goes on to speak to the whole question that white Americans, white so-called power, wants you to talk the way they want you to talk. So they put you out in the front if you are that way, and then you can speak for them. Candidates that run for office. We just had a mayoral candidacy here in Milwaukee, and a brother, young brother, was elected. The first black mayor to be elected as mayor. And as you know, you met Senator Taylor, but Senator Taylor doesn't speak in the voice that whites want to hear her speak. So that's why she's attacked quite often. And as a result of that, you know, that's a lot of her heat and the heat that she gets. But anyway, Brother Mike Holt, in his article, he did a, back in February 18th of this year, he wrote an article in his signifying column called Neck Bone and Negrocracy. And he is also addressing that whole idea of how there are certain Negroes used as buffers for that nationally strong voice that really is fighting for the change of our community. And I'm not going to read the whole article. I just want to read a little bit of it so you can kind of hear where he's coming from. He said, he said, Black English and Ebonics is different from merely adding a different meaning to a word. He calls it homophones, which is what some African Americans have tried to do with the adjective noun epithet N-I-G-G-R, which is different than N-I-G-G-A, or the ridiculous ellipsis N-word. In fact, given that it's Black History Month, because you wrote this in February, let's pause for a few minutes to provide my unique definition of alternative meanings of three words that fit not that profile. The first word is a revised meaning, but much so clarification, government. Several years ago, I realized we needed to redefine the word public because it was incorrectly applied or restricted to traditions, to traditional tax-supported schools. The propaganda machine convinced the gullible public that only schools failing under the tax-supported domain they control were public schools. Public schools were a monopoly and the only prescribed venue for poor children, even if they were not good enough for middle-class families, including the teachers and staff. That paradigm ended in 1990 when the late Polly Williams Milwaukee Parental School Choice Program became a reality. A public school was no longer exclusively operated by the Milwaukee Public Schools, but an entity that receives public tax monies and partial control by the state. Through that prism, a charter school is a public school, and a charter school is defined by its funding source and state public regulations. It isn't a private institution and a public school as well. If you don't know, the charter school concept was started by the head of the National Teachers Union and was initially restricted to unionized teachers under the governmental umbrella. Dr. Howard Fuller, who is the former superintendent of the Milwaukee Public School Government Schools, is rightfully given credit for charter expansion in Wisconsin. But Fuller is also a strong proponent of school choice, as both are options previously denied to lower-income families and fall within the public domain. And since private schools participating in the choice program, there is no such thing as a choice school, receiving the majority of their funding from tax, which means our dollars, isn't it also a public school? So how do you differentiate? Easy. I distinguish that schools controlled by the Milwaukee Public School Board of Directors are in fact government-operated schools. Governments don't equate to being inferior or corrupt. Even though Republicans and libertarians believe we would be better off with less government intervention, while Democrats believe more is better. Of course, the right draws a line at individual liberties and what happens behind closed doors, while the left leans more toward personal freedom, which are not free. In other words, it is absentee fathers versus the nanny state, sending your children to the school of your choice or restricting them to a monopoly. By redefinition, clarification gets to the heart of another of my philosophy, which lists replacing a public school system with a system of public schools. The school choice debate has essentially been about controlling the definition and the dollars versus what's best for the children. He said, my second word is negrocracy. He said, I'll be honest, I did not invent the term. It grew out of a conversation with Dr. Bill Rogers, and I immediately trademarked and he claimed it as my own, and he did. Simply put, the negrocracy is the black establishment, the status quo. I admit I've often attached a negative slant to the term, implying members are out of touch, past their primes or myopic, but that's not entirely true. I position the NAACP as a defining organization, and it's not just because the organization is seemingly controlled by the Democratic Party, unions, and liberal missionaries, but because the oldest civil rights organization has put these entities, platforms, before the colored people. Actually, I should probably explain my definition of missionary as well, as even though it's not among the top three. As I generally use it, a missionary is a white liberal who knows what's best for black America. They want to pick our leaders, tell us who to vote for, and more often than not, run the social service organizations that pacify instead of empowering. Missionaries are poverty pimps, working hand in glove with the Democratic Party to hand feed us, provide and cash the voucher checks, and then erect barriers so we can't live among them. The Negrocracy gave them the keys to the freedom bus, but not paradoxically. They can't figure out why they keep passing the same street signs over and over again. Hint, it's because they are driving us in circles, since they have a vested interest in keeping us on the poverty plantation. Last but certainly not least is my favorite and most comprehensive and often misunderstood invented adjective noun verb, and that word is neckbone. I am not talking about the meat. He says, well, actually I am. Visualize a neckbone. It has ragged edges like shark teeth and deep grooves where the most favorable meat rests. You have to suck our slurp out of the meat in between the ridges, hoping you don't also bite into the gristle of that fat, both of which will either add unnecessarily pounds, raise your blood pressure, or if eaten too often, send you to the hospital, if not the morgue. Boiled, baked, or stewed neck bones, for at least they did give off a soulful aroma that my father, born in the backwoods of Georgia, said was a cure for ED. But what smells good to you doesn't mean it's good for you. Several decades ago, I wrote a column with the headline, Neck Boneology 101. At that time, I replaced the N-word with neck bone, since I detested the former. Some thought I had applied the new epithet solely to women, since it was the conduct of a sister that prompted my name calling. But it wasn't the case. Even though the term appropriately applied to the twin siblings who punched and then shot a George Webb restaurant employee in the face last week because he supposedly shorted them on takeout hamburger. These neck bones will spend the next quarter century in jail trying to remember what neck bones smell like. Instead, when I wrote a neck bone is wearing makeup, or in the soul food vernacular, hot sauce, it is indeed a reference to our tribal sisters. But neck bone is generally neutral. The sperm donors who proudly make but don't raise their children are neck bones, as are the terrorists who hold our community hostage, the men who abuse their mates, and the punks who throw garbage out of their car windows while recklessly driving through our streets. Likewise, for the parents who don't have enough time to attend a parent-teacher association meeting conference and who share a joint with their 14-year-old child. Some conduct, some African-Americans, is the byproduct of systemic racism, just as the inability of an 18-year-old high school senior to read is the byproduct of an educational apartheid. But you don't need 20/20 vision to see the difference. Ghetto is another word that has taken on a different meaning since Jews left urban America. It fits the profile. We use refer to being country, illiterate, or hoodish as being Mississippi. But now we simply say ghetto, as in you can take the person out of the ghetto, but you much harder to take the ghetto out of them, which is where I'll leave this column. Discourse, horribly, dissertation, in other words, signifying, which is another word for, and he says, hotel. And I clearly agree with that, and I think that is the focus of what we want to deal with tonight from Amos Wilson's work. We have to call out in our community these problems. People dictate that for us. Politicians can't dictate that from us. The black church no longer can do it. It's lost a lot of its power voice to do that. It can do it, but it has to do it with action, not with words. And I think that's what we're doing. Amos Wilson laid out a clear blueprint for us. If you have seen his book, or if you haven't seen his book, yet I would suggest that you take a look at it, because very clearly he was able to he was able to, you know, use it in a way. He has diagrams in there. He has all kinds of things that would, that help us to understand, you know, what's taking place. He has a chart that, you know, he uses very clearly. And so it's an excellent source of studying. Study groups can sit down. The black conservatives, so-called black conservatives, have received a lot of attention from the white media. And they have been doing so for a long time because their ideas are thoroughly applauded. And what they say is what the white press, as I said earlier, wants to hear. You know, I'm talking about people like Steele and Glenn Lowry, folks like that. And on all sides of the intellectual debate, everyone sees to think that they have answers to the ills of this society. And so Amos Wilson took them on. And he wrote about the black neoconservatives. And he discussed the social development. And he discussed the real characters, such as Clarence Thomas, who was one of the sickest human beings I ever seen in my life, Thomas Sowell, Michael Steele, Herman Cain, who is now an ancestor as well. The purpose of this thought and this idea and this discussion is the current contemporary perspective that we have of black conservatives. And so it was from that view that Amos Wilson, in 1998, Blueprint for Black Power, a moral, political, economic imperative for the 21st century, took on that task. He said that black conservatives have received considerable attention from the white media, he said. He said, because their ideas are applauded as being something, something. Someone has just come on. Could you please silence your mic? I appreciate it. Could you please silence your mic?
They can't buy people too for them people funny more than true.
Could you please silence your mic, sir? Okay, folks, I'm sorry about that. So, you know, he actually clearly laid out why it's a problem, you know, how that must be stopped, and what is the energy behind making sure that it does stop. Wilson was a prolific scholar, no doubt about it. Anything you read, he's done a lot of work on learning and teaching our children and education. He was a prolific scholar in the realm of black intellectual thought. But there are a lot of scholars of that ilk as well, too, who took on academia, who has never been introduced in this public analysis of social comment. So basically in Amos Wilson, and a lot of his lectures are online, if you ever wanted to hear some of the things he says on YouTube. In his lectures and publications, he does remind us that a person who conserves is saving an item of value, and the idea of being conservative is to maintain, and this is important, is to maintain existing institutions. So by definition, conservatives are hostile to change and are opposed to hasty changes or innovation. And see, so what I'm doing is I'm not necessarily having a discussion on conservatism. I'm having a discussion on what goes on in our communities, what you're hearing when you watch a Ted Cruz or you watch Lindsey Graham, you know, what you're hearing. You're hearing people that says, I'm not thinking about you. I don't want to change nothing. We're okay the way it is. So conservatives think that prosperity, freedom, and how life was in the past is good. But however, prosperity and freedom are just very hollow words without meaning. And that's what Mike is saying about what he talked about, the words and the words that we use and look at. And so you are dealing with a group of people who were enslaved in this country when these words were constructed. So in some, there is a need, as he said, as Wilson said, for a blueprint of black power analysis for all of these kinds of thoughts. And it is leads down basically to what he calls a crisis of leadership. We got a problem with leadership. Senator Taylor is a leader, but she has no help. She doesn't have the financial backing that some of the other folks had. The current mayor of Milwaukee, that's just recently elected a couple weeks ago, had financial backing, not from black folk. It came from an entity of the city that needed to have his voice in there. There's a lot of crime in this city, a lot of killings and shootings and drive-bys, like it is all over America. I'm not just saying this is the only place. And so the crisis of leadership needs to be in the hub of the city, and that's not here. The NAACP is, as very clearly as Mike said, is just not there anymore to do that. You've got some good people that are trying to lead it, but again, in some cases, they've been bought. And they are not going to relinquish the finances that they are receiving from certain sectors of this community. And it's, so as a result, we get what we get. Now, let me say this. Why is this important? Why do we need to talk about this? Well, one of the things that we have been doing here at the Black Reality Think Tank and around is trying to come up with solutions. And if you don't deal with the solutions from this perspective, you can't deal with it. We've had Dr. Bridges has been on here. He's wrote a book called Trying to Recapture the African Mind. And we've asked, many of you have asked him the question, I ask him the question, how do you recapture it? It's not reading a book. It's part of it, it helps. But that's not the answer. And so you recapture it by putting those cornerstones in our community that can really do something. As I said, Clarence Steele, Thomas Sowell, and all of that group, they're not here. They're not there to help you. The organization, the NAACP, the Urban League, 100 Black Men, the Jack and Geo Club, all that stuff. That's not about resurrection. That's not about liberation. And so we have to begin to sit down and understand that. Barack Obama was not about helping black people. And I think we've all come to the conclusion of that now. It wasn't about that. I remember reading a book back in the 60s. It was written by a brilliant mind as well, Dr. Harold Cruz, wrote a book called The Crisis of the Negro Intellectual. And he dealt with this stuff. He went after the black conservatives too, because they are a problem. And they are blocking the potential of getting to the resources and things that we need without doing that. Stacey Adams is going to have a problem in Georgia. And if you notice now, a lot of these elections, they're throwing these black folk out of nowhere in there to run against them. The football player that doesn't know shit from Shiola is in there trying to run for office. And some of the ridiculous stuff that he said is saddening. It's not even funny. But this is what they're doing. They're throwing these folks, putting money behind them, got folks backing them up, getting out there like clowns and buffoons, trying to talk about running for office. And you know what? They'll end up winning because of that, unless we do something about that. So, according to Wilson, it's an effective strategy involves the invention and employment in vastly increased numbers of a species of people who can think more nationalistic, Afrocentric ideology, a dissemination of ideas expressed by people like Amos Wilson and others, John Henry Clark. Asa Hilliard. Dr. Hilliard wrote a book called The Maroon Within Us. And he talks about that we are going to have to do spiritual and political maroonage in order to come up with this system. You know what's interesting, and then I want to go to the lines and see what some of you have to say about this, and then we'll come back and just talk a few more things about Dr. Wilson, is to look at the crisis in the Ukraine and Russia, where you got a power, very clearly, Russia's a power. You know, why are they a power? They got nuclear bombs, that's why. And watching what they're doing to a country, and they don't care what you say about it. And yes, it's horrible as you look at those things and see those buildings and blowing up hospitals with kids. I mean, even politically, I might be mad at you, but I'm not going to blow up no hospital with kids in it. That's out of the question. Russia, they don't care. Russian diplomat said the other day, the Ukrainians were trying to create genocide against us. We just beat them to it. And as a result of that, you do it. So it's good to kind of look at that in a comparative and analysis as it relates to, say, us as African people, and what the fight must look like, and the spirit and attitude of the fight. And, you know, I found something the other day. The Ukrainians coming into the modern era, into the 20th century, was the third most powerful nuclear nation on the planet. The Ukrainians had serious bombs right after the Nazi invasion and all the breakup of the Soviet Union fell. The Ukrainians had the weapons. They had the bombs. So they could have done that. And in some cases, they may have done that. And this is just simply a retaliation of all of that. So when we look around at us today at the political jargoning that's going on and some of the things that are happening, and look at our world, you know, and what we are doing, it goes back to that quote that I read you from Amos Wilson. We're creating this. We're doing and letting them do what we won't do. And as long as we don't do it, then they're going to keep doing what they do. The Africans who were waging war against the Portuguese back in the early times in the 18th, 17th century, who were called the Columbos. And the Columbos had a quote that they used in their private meeting. And so they would tell their soldiers and their fighters. They said that the reason why you are enslaved is because you're afraid to die. You won't stand up and fight for yourself. That was their motto in the Colombian battles that they waged against the Portuguese and others. So I think we've got to go back. And we got folk that will help us. We got folk that are writing about this. I don't know if we are understanding it. I remember reading a book back in the early 1990s, I think it was, or no, 2000, I think it was somewhere around 2000, called The American Directory of Certified Uncle Toms. I don't remember how many of you read that, but that book was very interesting. And what it was then, exposing that Boule Negro mess that has the tendency to talk down about our people. And just because they're doing better economically than our folk, the way they talk down about everybody else. And that has a way of destroying. A lot of them end up owning property, renting out these slum houses to black folk. They rent these out to their own people. And that's what we need to stop. So I want to do this. Let me ask some of you what you think as it relates to that, because again, very clearly, you got to stand up and stop this, because if you don't, we will not be able to to do anything. We would not be able to move forward with us divided in the way that we are divided. So let's see what you have to say. My brother from Georgia, how you doing? 404. Area code 404-453. Want to add something to this conversation, or you just
listening? Yes, sir. How you doing there, Doc?
Fine, dude. I haven't talked to you in a long time. How you been?
Oh, man, I'm just out here trying to make it, man.
I hear you. Holding on. What do you think, man? How do you, what about the Amos Wilson's book value that you see could be used for us as a blueprint to recapture the minds of our people?
Well, Doc, first of all, we got to go back to the beginning on all this, for instance, man.
Okay.
A lot of people don't realize April 1st is the real New Year, man. Cause we the people of the book. I know this kind of sound wild to y'all, but April 1st is the real New Year, man.
Okay.
And once you get that in your head, then check this out, Doc. I'm going by this book that people claim to know that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? About this here Good Friday. Now, if you go to Daniel 9:27, mm-hmm. it says he was sacrificed in the midst of the week. Not no Good Friday, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's in the book. See, a lot of people ain't reading the book right, man. And then, I'm going to say this one more thing. Like I told Elliot there, man. We got to do that Passover, man. Okay? Forget about this going to church on Sunday. We the people of the book, man. We the real Israelite Hebrews, man. Okay, Doc? And once I start figuring that out and doing just what the law say, I don't take commandments. Hey, brother, I ain't got no problem, man. So
okay.
This Saturday coming up, you can still go to church on Sunday. That's the wrong day. But this Saturday, the Sabbath is the Passover. So just thank the Most High for the Passover, man. And
okay.
Hey, brother, it's fun time to be alive. Yes, sir.
Okay, I hear you.
Yes, sir, man. And we ain't got nothing to worry about. Once we get in line doing that, what the law say, man. I used to get in line, man. Okay, we got to get away from these demons, man. You can't do what they doing.
Mm-mm.
Stay out of their wall over there in Ukraine. Stay out of that. That's white folks' business. They time coming down, man. That's what that's all about. Their time is up. So
mm-hmm.
just watch the show, relax, chill. Y'all come on back down here. Doc, I heard you say you tired of winter, man. Come on back down here where your daddy from, man.
Okay. All right. Hey, look. Hey, I'm not ruling that out, my brother. I'm serious.
Yes, sir, man. I'll let somebody talk, man. I know I put a lot out there on the plate.
No,
man.
No, but that's good. Okay. I appreciate that. Very good.
Yes, sir. Much love, man.
Much love to you, too, my brother. Appreciate it. Warriors Way, continuing the fight. How do we continue the fight, my brother?
Well, you asking me, Doc?
No, I'm talking to my brother from Warriors Way.
Okay.
Brother Kwasi Kraft. Okay. Brother Kwasi, you there? Brother Kwasi, maybe you got your phone muted. Are you there? Okay. All right, you might have stepped away for a minute. Brother Herbie, how you doing tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers. I'm doing well.
Good.
Hope
thank
you're
you.
Doing the same.
Thank you. I am. Thank you so much. So, what do you think, Brother Ray? Did Amos Wilson have the message for us? That obviously we're
yes,
not paying attention.
Yes, you know, Amos Wilson was a very brilliant, you know, other and everything. But the situation that we're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
we are reacting to oppression.
Mm-hmm.
We are reacting. We're not proactive. We are reacting.
Reacting, right.
To the oppression, to the trauma, to the terrorism, to the torture, to everything. And if you go back to the beginning, when the transatlantic slave trade.
Okay.
And how it was created and the components that had to go into it, the triangle trade and everything, how much, and the intent of the people when they were doing it, and was there anything that anybody could have said or tried to impart to them don't do this. This is a bang. You're harming people. There was nothing that would have stopped them from doing what they were doing because they had no compunction. They had no caring. They had no feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't. So when we talk about Uncle Toms and conservatives and all this other stuff, this is a byproduct of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
This is a byproduct of trauma. Whenever we had situations where blacks were able to get to themselves, all that kind of stuff went away.
Mm-hmm.
In Tulsa and here in Durham and Hayti, you wasn't having drive-bys. You had bad people who did bad things, but you had respectfulness from the children to the parents. Everything, but this is all a reaction to trauma.
That's true.
And oppression.
That's what it is.
And we constantly react with, and it's constantly evolving. We're not dealing with the same type of problems as we dealt with when we were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
When we were slaves, there wasn't no crack addicts. Because they wasn't going to bring no drugs onto the plantation because they needed you to work.
Mm-hmm.
As things evolved after the so-called Civil War and whatnot, and black people spoke, then they came up with the black codes to replace the codes that was enforced during slavery. Mm-hmm. So they came up with the black codes and with Jim Crow and with the convict lease system.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps evolving, and we have to keep responding. And along the way, once you apply a certain amount of trauma, a certain amount of oppression, people crack.
Mm-hmm.
And they take the path of least resistance. So one of the paths of least resistance is to comply.
Yes. And that's what they do. That's what we do.
That's what they do. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to go. I'll do anything. Please don't hit me no more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's true.
So as long as we dealing with this trauma and with this constant enemy, we're going to keep having these problems.
Right.
And if somebody, like what happened in New York on the train, but if you was in a room with 25 people and somebody came in that room and started shooting, how could you control everybody's behavior at that time? Wait a minute, calm down. Let's leave the room orderly.
Right.
And every time it happened, you would still get the same result. If there was a shooting in a room with 25 people, and it happened, and you talked about it after it happened, and it happened again, you get the same reaction.
Right. And Brother Herbert, you were right on target. And you know, actually, Amos Wilson wrote about that. You know, a little bit. He wrote a book right before he did Blueprint for Black Power called The Falsification of African Consciousness, Eurocentric mm-hmm. History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. And he looked at the whole historical and the social, the societal amnesia we have about how that's all started. And then, you know, he was kind of following the path of Frantz Fanon, who also talked about that trauma that black folk had, even to the point that we want to be like white people. We want to look like them. And that's what Fanon wrote in the book Black Skin, White Mask.
Yeah.
And so the same...
If looking like them and acting like them will keep me safe...
Right. And so
you
that's
remember
what we got
a long time ago they used to have a cigarette commercial, would you rather fight than switch?
Right. That's right.
A lot of people switch.
Right. So we kind of like in a delusion as people, like I said, based on all that trauma. And we're not addressing the trauma in that way. How we did it, how we addressed the trauma, is we sang the blues.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and roll. But we didn't get rich off of that method. Other folk did. All of our folk ended up on drugs. And the white folks got the money. But we were trying to address the trauma.
Trying to find some kind of relief.
That's right. Trying to find some kind of relief. Or either we ate ourselves to death.
Again, trying to find some relief.
Yeah. So you're right. You're right, right.
I was thinking about going out tomorrow and getting me some neck bone.
I hear you. I get them kind of urges sometimes. I'll wear a piece of coconut cake. So no way, go get me a piece of coconut cake. Wash down my depression. But you're right. You're right about that. Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it so much. Brother Kwasi, you back? Brother Kwasi? Okay. Brother Kwasi?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you right. We took your little nap.
No. I had the phone. I had it on mute. I was just messing with these buttons because I got my headset on.
Okay. Sound like the Metro the Quiet. You took a nap. That's all right. No, that's what that was. But that's okay. I hear you, man.
I didn't have no neck bone, but I'm good.
I get them. That's another way of depression. I handle depression. I go to bed and take a nap. I ain't going to worry about it. So listen, what do you think about this Dr. Amos Wilson's plan? Can we ever put that ever in motion, you think, where we can really sit down and work out a blueprint, find a way to deal with that? Because, we talk about it all the time. We talk about solutions. A lot of our scholars have laid out the problem very well. Like I said, Dr. Bridges, he talked about recapturing the mind, African mind.
I think we've heard so many times about people wanting to, get it together, but we don't use or utilize our skills. We rely on the people that are oppressors to give us instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just see that as a problem all the time.
Okay.
Just like, we have a mayor, but, he has that overseer.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
I think that's what we're dealing with in most situations.
Exactly.
Even with our Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
And Ketanji Brown Jackson, or even Kamala Harris, our vice president.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
It looks one way, but, looks can be deceiving.
You've got an event coming up that also is going to look at some of the trauma and trying to address some of those things. You want to give the audience a brief description of what that is you're going to do next on Thursday night at 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, yes. We're going to do a show, and we have it titled All Black Men Matter. Redefining Black African Manhood, Fatherhood, Gender Identity, and Masculinity. And when we say that, it's how people are just redefining what that means and how we look at things now.
Okay.
I have some professionals on hand that's going to...
Who are they? Who are those professionals?
Brother Alfonso Watkins and Brother Kwaku Smith, both of them are clinical psychiatrists that have done a lot of work in dealing with just numerous situations, And so we're going to have this discussion, and it's going to be on Zoom.
Okay.
So it's going to be a little different format. First time, for doing it that way. So I'm looking forward to that. So got a lot of questions lined up and looking forward to getting questions from callers well, people that are going to be calling in, so I can just in the chat room just get that information and, you know, pose those questions to our panel.
Yeah, and you can go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page.
Facebook, yes.
Yeah, and you can get that link. And we are planning to simultaneously broadcast it to Facebook as well. It is a Zoom conference, and it's gonna we're gonna also simultaneously broadcast it on Facebook as well because we want to get this discussion out there. You know, we got to talk about this.
Yes.
And we're gonna do that on Thursday. And Brother Kwasi is the host and producer of that program, and Dr. Kwaku is has a very strong clinical psychiatric program, and then Brother Alfonso also has a strong clinical program out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
He's out in Arizona. So both of them are going to be on Thursday. Okay, thank you, Brother Kwasi. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
We definitely look forward to that. 414-243. Questions, or are you just listening? Okay, just listening. Appreciate it for doing that. Sister Makita, how you doing?
Oh, good evening, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Okay, great, great.
Enjoying your presenters and the subject matter. And I was really interested in what the brother was saying a few minutes ago.
Brother Herbie?
About, I think it was something to the that, you know, we're going along to get along.
That's true.
And you know, I think people just want to have a decent life they just want some peace. And we're constantly bombarded in so many ways that sometimes people just get to the point and say, you know what does it take so I can just I can just get along.
Right.
You know.
Right. Exactly.
Join the crowd, so to speak. So.
But it's killing
us. I'm going to keep listening and hearing what people have to say.
But it's killing us.
And then I might chime in as well.
I said that spirit is killing us, though. That get along, go along, get along. That's destroying us.
Well, that's interesting you said that because years ago when I was reading about the Cherokee Nation, and someone said, well, the reason why the Cherokees stayed around so long is because they were adaptive. They adapted to the situation. You know, those that didn't want to, that were forced out of their environment, had to do the Trail of Tears. And so the other half kind of stayed and said, "Well, we're just going to get along and, you know, go along with Mr. White Man," and so on and so forth. And now, even they were eventually destroyed. So, you know, I mean, I guess you have a point there if you look at it from a historical point of view.
Right. That's good. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. This is the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick station break, come right back. We want to talk to a sister out of Dallas, Texas, doing something as well. Get a viewpoint from them. So give us a few minutes. We'll be right back.
You can lean on me, brother. I believe you've carried too long. You can lean on me, brother. I believe you've carried too long. You can lean on me, brother. I believe you've carried too long. It's such a long, long way back home. And lean
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, we're back, sisters and brothers. Thank you so much. Appreciate you for being with us. Discussion tonight on Dr. Amos Wilson and his book, Blueprint Black Power, some of the merits of that, and looking at our contemporary society and see how that is all applicable. And we obviously, all of us, want to fight for change. And it's just not a discussion. It has to be action. And so we need to look at the various tentacles that can help us do that. And so that's the purpose of this program tonight and what we are looking at. We've got some great blueprints that have been developed for us that can very clearly do it. As I said, we mentioned Amos Wilson and his work, Dr. Asa Hilliard, in his work, The Maroon Within Us, Dr. Bridges' book that we talk about a lot, where we're dealing with recapturing the African mind. Books like Dr. E. E. Thorpe has written over the years about the whole historical development of African American. So we've got some blueprints. We got the study guides, but we just need to make them applicable and to do that. I hope all of you are staying safe as well, too. You know, this COVID thing is not over. I'm sure you all of you know that, and hopefully you're paying attention to that, doing whatever you have to do, wearing your mask. Just last week, I talked to about four or five different individuals, friends, who were caught COVID over the last 2 weeks, and one was real close to me, and they are sick, and then when she caught it, her husband caught it. Well, actually, her husband had it first, and then passed it on to her. She got it. And then some other folks that who don't know each other, they got it from somewhere. And so be careful, folks. You know, it's not over. You know, we're relying on a system to get our information that's just not in our best interest. And so just pay attention, and hopefully we can lick this baby and for us, you know, as African people. Okay, Grand Rapids, Texas, 214. How you doing tonight? Grand Rapids, Texas. You might have your phone muted. I don't know. Grand Rapids? Okay. Grand Prairie, really. Not Rapids. Grand Prairie, Texas? Okay, just listening. All right, that's fine. Thank you so much for being here. I know you're a friend from where you're coming from. So thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Brother Marcus, 160-240. How you doing tonight?
Greetings, Dr. Rogers. How you been?
I'm so glad to hear from you. I'm so sorry about what happened that last time you were on the air. But I know you recognize the mentality of that.
Let's forget about that. Yeah, you know, all people bipolar, you know, brother.
I know you're right. You're right, brother Marcus.
Bipolar. This society we live in make us bipolar. You know, so,
right.
Right. Don't really, make it bother me too much.
Yes, in good. Fact, that's good. That's good.
When I don't see that response, then I'm kind of shocked. When I don't get the bipolar response, I say, okay, you
right,
know.
Right, so. Right, exactly.
So, you know, I have a different, I don't think all is lost with our people, you know, because I think that black Negro, conservative, black bootlicker, it's eventually going to be a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because I use that BNC, Black Network Channel, Black News Network Channel, or whatever it was, that Lamont Hill used to work on, and Alan West, and they pumped $50 million into that channel.
Mm.
And it flopped. See? It went belly up. See? So that's proof that Black folks ain't interested in that type of psychology no more. Black folks is gravitating away from that. That's
right.
Uncle Tom is in. Because we are realizing that the Titanic is sinking.
That's right. That's it.
You know, even Stevie Wonder can see this. That's why he moved. He said he's going to Africa.
If
Stevie Wonder can see it, okay? Mm-hmm. If he can see what's going on.
Right, right.
Why, you know what I'm saying? Well, come on, you know?
Right.
So this system is on its way out. So we got to prepare ourselves.
Right, exactly.
We got to prepare ourselves. It's just a matter of time. It's going to crash.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I don't know if it's tomorrow or in the next 10 years, but all the indicators pointing that this system is on its way out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm going to say something in reference to what we saw today in New York City, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's not the first case something like that happened. Remember Colin Ferguson, you know, did something like that on the LIRR train, you know, in New York City. But what is happening is that the change is out there, you know, as the psychic, the sovereign psyche, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
The free in the mind. It's out in the virtual world, you know. The information is out there and it's taking effect. And what is happening is when the change hit that black man and he doesn't have nothing to anchor himself onto,
mm-hmm.
you see this. You see responses like this. See? You see, he knows. The black man out there who's, you know, he probably came into some information and his mind now free. Because I remember when I first got exposed to black nationalism and I came into myself, the first thing, the urge
right.
I did was, man, these people did me this wrong. And, you know, I need revenge, you know.
Right.
So maybe that brother, it hit him, you know what I'm saying? It hit him and say, oh man, you know, to hell with this. You know, just, you know. He said, you're going to see more incidents like this. Because as I said, as the black man wakes up, and if he doesn't have an organization to anchor himself onto,
yes,
you're going to see the spontaneous combustion. You just see the spontaneous. So it's important that we organize and get ourselves together. Because I said, what Marcus Garvey said, he said, when all else fails to organize the people,
right.
conditions will.
Yeah, I love
and
it.
The conditions are prime right now, brother. The inflation going through the roof, everything going sky high, you know, so... We gonna have to do something. Some hunger pains getting ready to hit.
Right.
And when your stomach hungry, brother, you move. You got to move. You know. Anyway, good brother, I am here. My ear is to the ground.
All right. Thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. And brother, and I'm glad brother Marcus brought in Marcus Garvey because Garvey did. Have the ideas and the thoughts along this whole liberation. Even though we're talking about Amos Wilson, Amos Wilson is borrowing in a lot of cases for some of the ideology of Marcus Garvey and building that framework. You know, because in the book, Black Power, he gets down to even talking about how to build an organization. Who needs to be on the panel? Who needs to be a part of the group, part of the leadership of that organization? What does that organization need to look like? That was Garvey. Garvey did that. That's what the kind of work that he was doing when he created. He had a whole preamble to things, a whole development of how an organization needs to look to make change, to be effective. And you have to do that because you know how things are. We get to fighting, fussing about stuff, and your idea better than my idea, and I don't like you, you don't like me. You know, and next thing you know is the organization is up in shams, fussing and fighting over nothing. You know, so it needs to have a structure to it. And that's what Amos Wilson does in Blueprint to Black Power. He creates and helps us look at that structure of how to develop an organization, how to develop a group to do a study and things of that nature. Okay, Brother Timothy, how you doing tonight, my friend, Philadelphia?
Yes, sir. I'm just coming back for you know what, sir, my martial art class, and I'm putting my listening skills, and I'm picking up, and I need to do more study on Amos Wilson, man, and put all that together with that black think tank. So I'm going to listen to the callers, and I like your subject, sir. And
okay.
On offline, you and I have great subjects, so I'm going to listen, and I'm going to talk about some stuff next Tuesday. I'll be probably more prepared.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Brother Lush, how you doing? I know one of the things that I've always appreciated from you is your questions always are based around how do we do this? How do we make this happen? How do we do? And that's kind of what spurred me to really look at Amos Wilson in some of the questions that you ask about that. So what are your thoughts? I know I like where you come from when you do that. So what are your thoughts around this work?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers. How are you today?
I'm doing great, my brother. Doing great.
And also to the listening family. You know, I'm sure glad I got home in time to recharge. My battery went out.
Okay.
So I had to charge up. But, you know, ever since your earlier statement, the quote from Amos Wilson regarding consciousness, you also mentioned during your monologue in the beginning about we got to call them out.
Yes.
We got to call them out. And so it leads me to the basic question, and it also pertains to me most particularly.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know if we are right about the things that we are pursuing?
Gotcha.
Right? And sometimes it's, you know, it's good to have these grandiose ideas, but how do we know that it's valid?
Gotcha.
In our own minds, we think it's true. And in our own minds, we say, yeah, it's going to work. But how do we know that? Can we ever admit that we can be wrong about things,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and be able to correct ourselves in this process?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when you have you're amongst peers and they correct you in your efforts, but can we look ourselves in the mirror and admit that we have done wrong?
You've done wrong.
But in whatever endeavor, mm-hmm, it could be.
Right.
And to be able to correct it. You know, we talk about forgiveness, we talk about community, we use all of the verbiage that's at our fingertips as it pertains to being as one. But can we admit to ourselves that we may have really screwed up? And so in this process, to be able to reflect back, have that Sankofa in such a way as to reconnect, and just be able to start over again.
Right.
And maybe there are some things that we may not have taken under consideration. But what some of our European counterparts just look at it our way. If we just went one or two, everything will be fine,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right? We don't need a whole group, just one or two, to be in our corner, and I feel all right now,
okay,
right? But is that right at all to do?
Gotcha.
And so as I was trying to rush home to catch the rest of this program, these were just some of the thoughts that I had on the road to try to express myself regarding this particular topic you're talking of.
I like that. I like that. And I think you're right. You know, we have to be first honest with ourselves. It's like the poem I learned years ago when I was a kid. Say, I have to look at myself and know. I have to be fit for myself to know. You know, that's what you got. You got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, you know, these things. You're right. I think, though, in what Wilson suggests, and he did address that in this blueprint, is to create an evaluation system process that helps you, you know, kind of like nature does. You know, nature is a key component for us to follow as it relates to how to do things. Nature has an evaluation process, you know, and okay. It's natural. And we need to have an evaluation process of things. And it has to be distant from that of the ruling powers. We can't say, well, we know we raised our kids good because they graduated from high school and got all A's. That's not an evaluation process at all. But be coming up with things that we know that are critical to us and to our Africanness. I think that's one, and that has to be worked out. You just can't answer this like that. You got to work it out.
Right.
And I do agree. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. We have to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, as I reflect back, and I'll close with this. You know, at one time, I can remember maybe last year or so, or I'll remember about asking if it's possible for us to create our own level of critiquing, our own kind of SACS accreditation, quote unquote.
Right, you sure did. You sure did.
But you all who are PhDs and elders and a coalition of you all saying, you know, we can pass through you. And
right.
With your guidance and your blessings
right.
And your teachings, et cetera. I mean, I know it can be done because it's done before.
Right.
It was done with Asa Hilliard. It was done with Jeffries and all the others that are amongst us as elders and as ancestors.
Yes.
So could this ever be done? I just kind of wonder sometimes.
And I think it can. I'm going to think positively. I think it can because as myself, in terms of looking at my life now, I don't always totally know how and why, but having younger kids that are still, you know, in my life, grandchildren, great-grandkids, I've got great-grandkids that are old enough for me to deal with and talk to, and looking at them and the questions they ask me and watching them and their behavior. And there are some things that I see that I can help them connect to. And you know, and it has to start with, you know, their mother and me recognizing, you know, the role that she has and begin to look at it from that perspective. And give that kind of advice to her, and I have done that. And one of the things that I had to do is I had to soften her resistance as of her trying to worry about. I'm trying to tell her how to raise her kids. I had to spend more time on that first to make her comfortable, know that I wasn't trying to tell her how to run her kids, because that's the first thing she pop up. Oh, Dad, I got that. I know I'm a mom. I know how to take care of my kids. And I said, no, that's not what I'm doing. Not what I'm doing. I need you to listen to me. So yes, we can do that. But it has to start with some kind of a system like that. It has to get back into our ritual of African people, of how the elders do what they do real good. I knew my grandparents could get to me. I don't know how, because I was hard-headed. I knew I was hard-headed as a kid, but they had a way, and it wasn't just the belt. It wasn't that belt. I'm telling you, my grandmother didn't have one. She had a switch. She used to get switches. You'd go out and tell me to go out in the bush and break off a switch, come back, bring it to her, but she never kind of really used it. But somehow or the other, the psychology of me having to go out and break that switch, Branch, this made me want to listen to it. And so I think that, you get where I'm going with that? You see the...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The mental work that's involved in that.
Yes. Well, Dr. Rogers, I'm interested in knowing what others have to say on this topic, so I'm going to yield and just intently listen to others as they speak as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. We've got a brother, my brother, my very good friend, my dear brother that's on now from Phoenix, Arizona. He's a member of, going to be a member of that panel tomorrow on Thursday. That's going to be talking about manhood and rights. And I don't want him to give away a lot of what they're going to talk about, but I'm just going to see if he wants to say a little something and just give us some thoughts and something. Brother Alfonso, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Peace and blessings to you, Baba.
Peace and blessings to you. Yes.
May I have permission to speak?
Yes, you do. Speak.
Yes. Thanks. I really just tuned in. I just got out of work, so I just tuned in, and I heard you mentioned Amos Wilson and a book. So what's the subject matter with Amos in the book?
Well, what we were doing is basically looking at its value for now. As you know, the book was talking about how to a blueprint for Black Power in the 21st century, and we're obviously in the 21st century, and we've got all kind of plethora of problems, and what is it in that book that we can begin to extract, and then what we were mainly focused on is how the Negroocracy is used to counter that kind of behavior. They stop us from doing anything, because you get these Black conservatives who stand up and you know, do the things that they do and, you know, speak for us, and we can't speak for us like that. It's not a way to do that. So that was one of the things that we looked at in terms of that. But I'd like for you to answer, did you hear Brother Lush's question just now?
Yes, I heard Brother Lush.
Yeah, can you, are you able to comment on that?
There is a reality to our ability to be able to look at what works and what hasn't worked, how do we continue to build on what is working. So I totally agree with Brother Lush for us to be able to be mature enough in our human development to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And be receptive to being redirected in these areas of science.
Mm-hmm.
I think we as a collective group of people haven't gotten to a place where we are able to respect each other's when we are speaking out of a science of those who practice that science.
Right.
Exactly. So I think that area of maturity as a collective group of people that we have to get to and be willing to be receptive in the guidance of those brothers and sisters who speak out of those areas of science, because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something they think or something that they or have a perception of, but it's a science that they have practiced and that they have mastered.
Okay. So it's sort of Brother Herbie White said. You might have missed him, his comments. He was talking about that trauma can be overwhelming, overbearing on African people. So a lot of the responses that you see happening is coming out of a trauma-set mindset. And, you know, Amos Wilson talked about that as well as Frantz Fanon talked about coming and operating out of a trauma-like state of being and state of mind.
Right.
Is that what? Yeah. Did you hear that? No, you didn't hear. No, you weren't. You weren't on there.
No, I didn't hear that. I hear that. But I think we have to be, I'm gonna say, careful with the conversation as it relates to trauma, because I think a lot of times that paradigm is coming out of a European social context.
Okay.
And where I'm going with that is that coming out of the conditions of chattel slavery. The trauma that we experienced, we still were able to produce positive and productive human beings coming out of that condition.
Okay.
So from a clinical or human or black African developmental psychology perspective, we have to once again just be a little more cognizant of how we are talking about trauma and not allow the European construct to for us to buy into the dysfunctionalities of trauma.
See, and I like that. I like that.
Yeah, because even with the concept of trauma, something about the essence of being African and us being able to come out of the 1800s and reach the level of competence and productivity that we were able to do, we need to understand that. Mm-hmm. We need to do a better job of being able to articulate what our ancestors were able to do despite coming out of those conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I say.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So I'm just saying, so let's be careful with this trauma thing.
Okay.
Because what Europeans are doing with it is using it as a mechanism to continue to show or attempt to show our dysfunctionality.
Right.
Of why we dysfunction.
Well, see, and that's the key to why folk like yourself need to be on the battleground, and you are, and very clearly you are, to explain that. Everybody's not going to come to the table knowing that's what you just said. They just hear the word trauma, and it sounds like, oh, yeah, that is what I got, you know, and they go off with it.
Right.
They don't know that they're not supposed to say that, you know. You know what I'm saying? And that's why you have to teach that.
Right. And then another component is, as we have in this conversation, I was thinking about what, and when we talk about the our children and preparing them for the 21st century for Black Power or Pan-Africanism or for the concept of nation building, we have to recognize what they are being exposed to mm-hmm. and what is interfering with their ability to be able to focus and to be disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you were just talking about going to get that switch, we wasn't watching TV like that. We mm-hmm. didn't have a telephone. I mean, so there was a different level of creativity within the context of the socialization.
That's true. That's really true.
So we have to be cognizant that the children that are coming through this technology age that are coming through, that are crack babies, that are being exposed to a lot of the chemical warfare, the vaccinations and all that, all that's impacting their cognition.
Right. Exactly.
So we're dealing with a different type of being, but still there's a science behind melanin that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're still able to produce positive and productive human beings despite being exposed to all of these poisons.
You're right.
We still see the genius in our children, despite being exposed to all this. So I'm just saying we just have to be a little more leery or cognizant of what we are hearing or what we're seeing as it relates to our development and come out of that European social construct in defining that.
And you're right. And so what I think then needs to happen, based on just what you said, is that obviously a parent or someone is going to respond to certain things that their children do. And again, like we said before, they're not going to have that background ideas and knowledge that you're presenting now. So they're just going to respond to what they see. So somehow or the other, we have to begin to create some mechanisms so that they'll understand that what they're seeing is not as dangerous as you think that they are. You know, if that's what you are saying, that is a lot of it has to do with some other factors. You know, and most mothers don't say that because a lot of times they're guilty of doing some of the things you're talking about, letting them watch TV. I remember when Sesame Street came on, mothers were letting their children watch that mess as a form of education.
Right.
This is what they had. The Saturday morning at 10 o'clock cartoons. And all of the children got together with the cereal bowl in front of them to watch cartoons. And that was devastating, man. That's devastating stuff.
Yes, it's devastating. And another piece that's happening now, Baba, that our people fail to realize, and it still shows the genius of our children, is when you can get them a telephone.
Them telephones. Better than I can.
Yes, Right. But the impact that it's going to have on their brain, that's too much stimulus for their brain.
Outside of yourself, I mean, and things you're doing. Who's teaching that?
But we're not having those conversations because we, those brothers like myself who are in, who have this information, we don't get opportunity to be in the spaces to articulate this science. With the book of Blueprint for Black Power by Amos Wilson,
right?
We are not ready to receive a message.
Right. You're so right. And I'm laughing because somebody told me that. What the hell he know?
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, please.
That's how we do each other.
Right.
And you know, so part of, once again, is being able to get to a place where we can respect each other's genius, because if a lot of times, since I have not been validated, I can't validate you.
Right.
And that's part, and I'm going to go to use the word trauma. We're going to have to find another word, but that's part of our experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's part of our experience. You got brothers and sisters who have not been validated, so they don't know how to validate nobody else. So mm-hmm. so that emotion, that feeling in their immaturity, they're not mature enough to come out of their own selfish gratification mm-hmm. to acknowledge somebody else's genius.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. I definitely like that. Now, you, Thursday, you all are going to talk about that masculine manhood, father image conditioning of our community and looking at the plus and minuses of that. am I correct?
Yes. So, uh-huh. Yes. And part of the conversation is, once again, being able to have the conversation from a physiological, biological, and clinical perspective.
Right.
And so being able to share or disseminate some information as it relates to, manhood, womanhood, masculinity, the gender, because there's a chemical warfare that we have to acknowledge and become more mm-hmm. cognizant of mm-hmm. as it relates to why we're seeing so many brothers not being able to identify with the gender that they're born in, that they're born with. Mm. So there's some chemical, and once again, the chemical and biological warfare that's taking place, we going to have some conversation about that.
Excellent. Beautiful. Well, Brother Kwazi is on, too, so he hears you. And I had him to kind of give the audience a little bit of information about what we're going to be doing, you and Brother Kwaku. So I'm looking forward to that. So, folks, don't forget Thursday at 6 o'clock on Zoom. You go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page, and the link is there. If you get you can get the link on the promotion that's there, and by all means, be sure to listen to that. What are you, just real quickly, and I know we could run into that, what are you, your work that you're doing now in Arizona? I know you were running a clinic, and you actually have I think it was, I thought, 36-bed clinic that you're running, is that correct?
No, it's a 45-bed.
45,
detox.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 45-bed detox and inpatient substance abuse clinic.
Okay.
So part of what's happening in the space is individuals that are coming in who are struggling with, you know, with fentanyl, I mean, with heroin, with alcohol, with cocaine, taking them through the detox process, and then getting them into inpatient treatment. So this experience is just giving me more insight to, once again, it's chemical warfare that we're dealing with.
Right, exactly.
And then the other piece of it, Baba, is getting to watch human beings fight for their survival through this,
mm-hmm.
and getting a better understanding of human nature and the will to survive despite, you know, being addicted or this physical and physiological and biological addiction, but also the spiritual component that comes with that.
Right. Yes, indeed.
So this experience, once again, it's going to help me, give me some more tool sets as it relates to helping our people understand not just the physiological and biological addiction, but behavioral addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So behavioral addiction, once again, most people understand that a gambling addiction is just as damaging as being addicted to crack.
Okay.
But it's a behavioral addiction. You're not necessarily consuming a chemical to alter your state of being. You are engaged in an activity that is creating chemicals in your brain that you become addicted to. So it's a whole nother level. And when we start talking about the reparation and the repairing of us, we have to understand what is happening chemically in our brain functioning under oppression and racism. So that's what I'm experiencing over here, Baba. Thanks for asking the question. And once again, Baba, much love to you.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I appreciate
your continued endurance and, man, and persistence and consistence of what you do, man.
Thank you.
Much love and respect for you, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate you,
thank
my
you,
brother.
Thank you, Brother Alfonso. I'm looking forward to our Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah, brother. Much love and respect to y'all.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And you know, brothers and sisters, this is, like I said, this is so important. And that's why, you know, this is kind of developed around a think tank. None of us have all of the answers to our situation, our condition. Because if we did, I know we would put it to work and make it happen. But we are here to discuss it, lay it on the table, give it the thought that it needs, and go out and try to develop it. Brother Alfonso. Brother Alfonso, we actually used to host one of our broadcasts in Milwaukee when he was here. He's the one that started the Elders of Sankofa, and he did his own program. We talked a lot about these things. Talked about our youth, some of the things, and that's what we have to do. We don't have all the answers. We don't know. I didn't study this. That's not my area. My area was history. And I understand the historical development of things. So I can come together with Brother Alfonso. He can talk about what he does. I talk about what I've understood and bring it together as a format and a framework. And that's what we did, really, he and I did with the Elders of Sankofa, was to bring that together to begin to try to do that. So I think that's what we need to do more of in our community. Let's put our heads together. Let's lay down this idea. And it's like a lot of times people say, oh, well, all you're doing is talking. Well, you got to talk some. You got to, because it's not clear that we have understood what has happened to us. And that what he just told us about that trauma thing, that's really something that's kind of new to me. I know that there's a lot of talk lately about this trauma. We going through trauma and this, and trauma is causing that, and trauma does this. I listen at some of these people trying to explain the high rate of crime and what our young people are doing in the streets now. And even that what the sisters, Brother Mike Holt was explaining in the paper about the women that went into that George Webb restaurant and shot the guy in the face because he gave them the wrong hamburger. What causes that? What made them feel that his life was less valued than the hamburger? And the question comes back, or the answer comes back, is that they didn't see that life as being valuable anymore because things that they've gone through. And so you have that. And that's been going on for a while in terms of how we look at stuff. I was just thinking the other day of the book about Richard Wright called Native Son. And I'm sure all of you have encountered that book in some way or the other. But there's a scene in the book where Bigger Thomas is in jail for killing that woman. He killed her sister. And he's in jail for that. And the lawyer is talking to him. And actually that discussion was used in the movie Time to Kill, when Samuel Jackson is in jail and the lawyer is in there talking to him, but he's talking more philosophical and things like that. But in the Richard Wright's version, the lawyer asked Bigger Thomas, he said, Bigger, do you ever dream? Do you have dreams? And and Wright wrote it. He looked at him. He said, my impulse to dream has been slowly beaten out of me by the travails of life. And again, that's Richard Wright trying to make a point, but it's a very powerful statement. He said, the impulse to dream has been slowly beaten out of me by the travails of life. Now, bringing that to the more real world, I have worked with schools and children, and I know Brother Alfonso, you have, Brother Kwasi, you have, and many of you have worked in these schools. And I asked some kids that one time, just off the cuff. I said, you ever dream about anything? They said, what? Dream about what? You know? And I said, just anything. Anything you want to dream about? No, I don't dream about nothing. I just go to sleep, get up in the morning. And I found that interesting. I didn't comment on it. I didn't follow through on anything, stuff like that. But it is applicable about that in terms of the way our minds work and handle the crisis that we go through on a daily basis. A lot of our children are in that state of being in our communities where they're really scared to go outside. A lot of times when I hear about three or four people got shot somewhere, start thinking about my grandkids. I say, oh, I'm sorry that anybody's gotten shot, but I listen prayerfully to hope that I don't hear their names. And there have been times that I didn't have to do that. So I think it's a good point. It's a good understanding as we close this discussion on Amos Wilson's book, Blueprint for Black Power. I understood what he was doing, what he was trying to do. I like his connection of other works and thinkers. He even uses the destruction of the black civilization with Chancellor Williams to look at how that Williams's outline for black self-determination took place. And he's using that to incorporate into the blueprint concept. And some of those kinds of things. And then obviously, at that time when this was going on, the Obama election had just happened. And so, you know, that was embraced in there in some terms of things of how it was. So it was really a good piece. And now we look at the idea that they want to take away the history of our people where we are trying to teach our children with this critical race theory. And folks are coming up doing that. And you can see the pattern here. It's continuous, but very clearly we can't let it happen. And I've said this before. We cannot let that happen. And so we have to stand up and do what we have to do. And all of this knowledge that a lot of our clear intellects and scholars have created is in place. And all we need to do is go back and review some of those readings and look at some of those. Everything that we talked about has been discussed before by others. And we just need to go back, take a look at them, come together, create some think tanks, pull them together to try to work individually on some of these problems, you know, and we can make it happen. So with that, I'm going to ask you, any closing thoughts with anyone? The mics are open so anybody can say something. Brother Lush, I hope your question got answered. Does it bring a little clarity what you wanted to do? Brother Lush?
Yeah, I was just trying to tune in. No, I'm fine. Fine. This is a conversation that could be had more than one time, I'm sure.
Sure, yes it is.
And so, I guess for me, at the state of where I am in my life and what I'm doing now, what is it that needs to be done? How could I be of service to make things better? Mm-hmm. Some of the questions that I ask at this current state and time. So
right.
I throw it out to you all, but in essence, I'm throwing it out to myself.
Exactly. Right? I got you.
And I'm trying to get that reflection. Okay. What kind of nonverbals am I sending out? Right. So, yeah, that's
okay.
Hey, always willing to listen and to learn, brother.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Brother Herbie, anything you want to add? Brother White, Brother Herbie? Okay, Brother Kwasi, anything?
Hello, Dr. Rogers, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Uh-huh.
I ain't got nothing to add. I just want to say I sent you an email.
Okay, good, good, okay.
Okay.
Brother Kwasi?
Yes, I'm just going to piggyback off of what Brother Alfonso was saying, you know, as far as who we listen to and how we don't want to validate or invalidate other people in regards to what they know and what they're seeing from their experiences. So I can really appreciate that. So I'm just looking forward to the dialogue.
Okay.
So thank you.
All right. Good enough. And like I said, next Thursday, this Thursday coming up, we'll have a discussion of sort of in line with this thoughts, looking at masculinity and some of the struggles that we are encountering with that. And I really appreciate all of you. We'll be back here next week. Brothers and sisters, I thank you all so much for your questions, your participation, and have a wonderful, wonderful and productive week. Thank you.
It would be easier than this.
Okay.
I thought my heart had grown colder, but the warmth of your kiss I can't dismiss. Though my past has left me bruised, I ain't hiding from the truth. When the truth won't let me lie right next to you. But it's holding on and it's holding strong. Even though I tried to make it, played the part, but I can't fake it. It keeps holding on and it's holding strong. Even though I tried to break it, heaven knows that I can't shake it. Holding on, holding on, holding on, holding on. I've seen times that were harder. I remember the taste of bitterness. Won't you help me, my Father? Help me fall in the love that I have missed. Though my past has left me bruised, I ain't hiding from the truth. When the truth won't let me lie right next to you.